Bankless Nation, welcome to the weekly roll-up where we cover the weekly news, drama, and developments in the crypto space. This is the third week of February. Today on the show, I have the pleasure of being joined by Kane Warwick. Kane, how you doing, my man?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Just got off a flight from Hong Kong, so this should be fun.
It was a messy week. Are you sure you are ready to go through the messy-ass week of news that I have for you?
Always ready. Always ready.
Okay, Kane, where were you when Javier Milei dropped the Libra meme coin?
It was just before I headed off to Hong Kong.
Did you buy?
I didn't buy it. You know, it's funny. Like, I had that whole thread about Trump and just being like washed on the trenches and not having like enough energy to deal with it. And I saw it and I was just like, I'm too tired. I can't handle this.
We're too many loops down the roller coaster. Okay, so yeah. I'm going to go through. There is a ton of things that happened as a result of the fallout of Javier Milei. I have like 20 links in front of me to go through it all. And so, Kane, maybe just like sit back and relax while I like
Let's
run through some of the facts. And then we'll kind of debrief about all of it at the very end. So on Valentine's Day at 5:01 p.m. Eastern time, Javier Milei tweets out this tweet saying, Argentina grows. This project will be dedicated to encouraging the growth of the Argentine economy by funding small Argentine businesses and startups. Drops a Solana contract address. The name of this project, in quotes, is called Viva Libertad Project.com, ticker Libra, and then a Solana contract address. And so if you bought this on Valentine's Day, congratulations, you are a true crypto bro. The Libra token immediately launched at something like a $2.5 billion valuation, and then it jumped up to $5 billion within 30 minutes. And then from 90 minutes from launch, it was down to $30 million. So inside of 90 minutes from launch, it went up to $5.5 billion and then down to less than $500 million. Already people's just like warning signs were triggered with this Libra launch. 82% of the Libra token were held in one cluster of wallets that all spawned the Libra token. Also, no tokenomics were shared. Unlike the Trump token, no tokenomics were shared, just the president of Argentina tweeting out this Solana contract address. And so people's like warning signs were all ready firing, but then I guess it doesn't really matter because the thing had already dumped inside of 90 minutes. There was another tweet from Javier Milei saying, a few hours ago, I posted a tweet, like I have so many countless times, supporting a supposed private project, which I obviously have no connection to. He has since deleted the tweet and finishes the tweet with, to the filthy rats of the political castle who want to take advantage of this situation to do harm, I want to say that every day they confirm how lowly politicians are, they increase our conviction to kick them out in the arse. This is just day one. There is this individual that arises on this scene named Hayden Davis from something called Kelsier Ventures, who I don't think anyone had ever heard of before. Kane, have you heard of Kelsier Ventures?
No, it's weird. Like I'm in a lot of chats and there's different cabals that have been mentioned, but these guys never came up to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. And this individual, Hayden Adams.
I was about to say, you're using his full name. How much did Hayden Adams pay you
to use his full name? Second Hayden that I've ever come across in crypto. First one, yeah. Hayden Adams of Uniswap. Great guy. Hayden Davies, who is supposedly behind this Trump meme coin, along with Kelsier Ventures, puts out this statement about trying to explain what just happened. And it's kind of a mess of an explanation. He puts a lot of blame upon sniper bots that were going to come and snipe the supply. And then later, also, Hayden went on a CoffeeZilla interview. If you do not know who CoffeeZilla is, he is this YouTuber who kind of just exposes scams across the world and very frequently comes into the crypto space because we tend to produce a lot of scams. And so we invoked CoffeeZilla. CoffeeZilla posted an hour and a half long interview with this Hayden individual where Hayden admitted that he sniped, Kelsier Ventures sniped the Libra supply ahead of to front run actual snipers.
Maybe not the best tactical decision in this whole mess to go on CoffeeZilla. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as well thought out as this criminal mastermind we thought he was, but here we are.
It does seem very much like an SBF post FTX list, like publicity tour.
Just meltdown.
Where the man just does not comprehend at all that he just might be in at least a little bit of legal trouble.
Yeah.
He thinks he's good.
Just crashing out, completely crashing out. Yeah,
completely crashing out. Yeah. It doesn't stop with Hayden, though, who somehow, we will reveal shortly here, got Javier Milei to tweet out this tweet. So we'll talk about how he actually got that to happen. But there's also something that's worth talking about in this whole complex is Jupiter and Meteora. The Meow, who is the founder of Jupiter, it's not his actual name, had to put out the statement saying, hey, they're early employees of Jupiter were seen trading the Libra token, but Jupiter had nothing to do with the launch of this token. We had no employees that had any insider information. So he had to put out the statement that Jupiter and nobody in the Jupiter orbit really had any sort of insider knowledge. Meow, again, founder of Jupiter, had founded this thing called Meteora, which is kind of like a more sophisticated AMM with a bunch of levers and gadgets and dials to really kind of be able to tweak a DEX on Solana. And Meteora does not have the same level of deniability. So there's Ben Chao from Meteora, who has since stepped down, who also tried to distance himself from this Libra launch. But as it turns out, there is this association between Meteora and Hayden Davis, that has been ongoing. So not just the Libra token, but also the M3M3 token, which I think stands for meme, which is related to the Meteora token. It is the meme coin that was launched on Meteora, as well as we find out, the Melania token. So the Melania token, Hayden admits to once again on the CoffeeZilla interview that he was also a part of the Melania token launch. And so we have this one individual who is finding ways to reach out to people of influence and convince them that it's a great idea to launch a token. And then they get referred to Meteora as kind of this technical service provider. There's the idea out there that it's actually Meteora who's trying to snipe the supply ahead of Hayden Davies. And so it's actually Ben Chao or somebody in the Meteora orbit who's actually doing the sniping, and it's actually Hayden Davies and Meteora that's going head to head to try and snipe the supply of this meme coin that is being tweeted out by Javier Milei. Now, it's worth noting how this individual, Hayden Davies, who is a United States citizen, lives in LA, got access to Javier Milei. And it's reported that Hayden Davies found a way to reach out to Javier Milei's sister and wrote messages that have been turned into screenshots on Twitter that say that to the effect that he sends her money and that she is in her total control. And through Javier's sister, he is able to gain access to Javier, which is how a tweet coming out of the president of Argentina had a Solana contract address in it. This, I think, Kane, I have a take for you. This Sorry. Is not nearly as bad as FTX, but this is the worst thing in the crypto industry since FTX. How do you like that take?
It's the worst thing this year so far, I would say.
It's February, bro.
I know, right? I know. It's dark times. So I think the interesting thing about this is not a singular event or news story, right? Like this is something like FTX that was bubbling under the surface for a long time, right? Maybe not as long as FTX, but I think the thing about FTX was it really undermined your view of reality, right? Like I had conversations with SBF where I was like, where's, you know, on Twitter, like where are you pulling this yield farming money from? And it was like, oh, it's Alameda. And so, you know, all of a sudden you had to question your perception of like all the things that had happened, right? And I think this is one of those things where a lot of people in the space have been like, okay, it's a, you know, there's obviously these different cabals doing crimes, and you know they're manipulating launches and they're bribing people to do you know token launches. But the idea that there was, you know, one puppet master in the background controlling this whole thing that no one had ever heard of is like so wild. It's really, you know, and then all of a sudden you go, okay, well, who, if they're able to compromise this person, who else did they compromise? And so there's this kind of unwinding of a lot of stuff that's happened, and now you've got a singular thread that runs through it all. And I think that's been kind of the wildest part of the story is that there's just this crackhead guy running around, you know, bribing and manipulating people and taking advantage of different platforms and teams. And, you know, it's insane that someone was able to get that much control and influence without anyone really knowing that this was going on.
Yeah, I would be curious to know, and I think we're going to find out, because I'm going to go ahead and guess that there's already active investigations going on to be, the man resides in LA. He resides in Los Angeles. He's on shore. And people lost a lot of money with this. Dave Portnoy was paid tokens ahead of launch, was paid tokens, Libra tokens by Hayden Davis to promote the Libra coin when it came out. Dave Portnoy returned those tokens, saying that because Hayden requested Dave to not tell anyone that he was going to promote the Libra coin. And so Dave returned those 6 million coins, which I don't know what the total value was, but millions of dollars. But Dave had insider information. And so therefore he bought the token thinking that he was going to buy early. And I think many people bought the token 5, 10, 15 minutes into the launch, and they all ended up down because there are these very early snipers that were trying to snipe the supply. And when the initial valuation of the thing comes out at $2.5 billion, then everyone's going to lose. Dave Portnoy was refunded his money that he lost by Hayden Davis to the tune of $5 million. And now everyone is very upset that Dave Portnoy is getting a freebie return on his capital that he risked after calling like the crypto trader bros like a bunch of crybabies, which I think is quite ironic. And I do agree with you, Kane, that like I think this was what we are really seeing here is the exposing of the industrialization of the meme coin launch.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely going to get worse every single time Hayden Davis and this structure of incentives between Meteora and other morally compromised individuals, if that was allowed to grow, it would have just gotten worse and worse and worse. It was just so happened that when the president of Argentina launched a coin and the incentives collapsed between Meteora and Hayden Davis, that everyone realizes the gig was up. And so what started off as like a relatively fair, fun casino of meme coin launches that was a reaction to the high FDV, low float meta actually turned into having something with like no rules, no regulations, no guardrails. And once again, the grifters come in, figure out how to game the system and blow it up for the rest of us. And this is a pattern that we've seen in crypto time and time again.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting thing to me, even, you know, being on this show today and seeing the process of kind of unwinding this and how many people are looking into it is like, if this had been going on and we had the level of vetting of people and an investigative, process that's going on now, 2018 would have been a very different place, right? 2018 ICOs, it was crime central. You had these guys in Singapore running ICO mills. I met some of them. Like when I was in Singapore, someone was like, oh, you got to meet these guys. And I turned up to this office and I was like, you know, what are you guys doing? And they're like, oh, we've got a bunch of projects. And, you know, they basically would just find a team of 20-year-old kids and write a white paper for them, do their tokenomics, go and, you know, find a couple of syndicates to like start, you know, basically buying up the tokens in pre-sales. Then they would just flip them. They would get a bunch of the supply, 5, 10, 15, 20% of the supply, and just flip it and just dump it straight into the market after they got listed on, you know, whatever exchange, right? So as you say, this is a story that's very, very old in crypto, right? You know, grifters will turn up and exploit the permissionless and you know, low barriers to entry that we have in crypto to just extract value. This, what is interesting to me is just how quickly it all happened. You know, you go from meme coins 2023, you know, through like this is basically a thing that happened in the space of a year, that this all became industrialized and a few players gained enough market share in grift launches, right, to basically become monopolists.
What do you think about just like the level of inherent griftiness in the meme coin vertical as a whole? because the ICOs, I was very pilled by ICOs because I was young and naive, and that's what happens when you come into crypto. Yeah. And now I look back, I'm like, okay, that was actually just a bunch of just grift happening. Same thing concluded with even with DeFi Summer, where we end up with 10,000% APY pool twos. Same thing with NFTs. Like the Azuki, like Elementals Mint, I think everyone kind of felt like jumped the shark. This is how all of these metas end. And then there was like this interest of conversations of people talking on crypto Twitter about like, well, you know, let's rank all of these metas in terms of griftiness and talk about which ones were better. And I think this was a tweet that really rocketed around the Twitter sphere from Anatoly from Solana, who said DeFi Summer was way worse. Leverage loops that create a nasty house of cards. There's virtually no contagion in meme coins. The Ethereum community, and I think the broader crypto community, did not like this take. But what, like, what's your take on like how grifty meme coins are, and how you like think about these things?
So it's funny. I mean, that, like, that tweet is one of the most retarded things I've ever seen. Right? Like, it just is. Right? And you know, like, I love Tolly. He's a very smart guy. But the interesting thing about that tweet, and you know, this is from a person who's tweeted some retarded stuff themselves. Right? Like, I'm not immune to this. Right? That was coming from a place, and you know, Tolly said this later. He was triggered by the fact that you had a bunch of DeFi people and ETH maxis pointing fingers at you know, Solana, saying it's a crime chain, and he's like, guys, like, no, this is not fair. Like, you've just whitewashed history and pretended like this is all flowers and rainbows in DeFi Summer, and you know, he didn't even go back to ICOs, right? Like, ignore right. DeFi for a second. The ICOs were you know, just as bad, if not worse, than meme coins. Because the interesting thing about meme coins is, okay, you know, these guys pulled out 100 mil, right? Mm-hmm. You know, this Hayden Davis guy pulled out 100 mil. You know, then you look at like Meteora, and you know, people added it up. Let's say it was like 3 billion. Like, the EOS ICO was $4 billion. Mm. Right? Like, you know, there were so many 50, 100, $150 million ICOs in 2018 that just like evaporated, right? So, you know, in terms of the scale of money at that time in the industry as well, $150 million ICO was like, you know, 1% of the market cap of Ethereum or something like that, right? Like, it's, you know, we're talking an insane amount of money relative to everything else. And I think one of the reasons why meme coins were not as bad as they could have been is most of the rugs happened pre-exchange listing, right? The exchange actually did a pretty good job of vetting coins, and you know, as this accelerated, and it was like 90 minutes between launch and rug, right? You know, the liquidity that was actually in these pools was far lower, right? Like, if you start an ICO, people put $150 million worth of ETH into the ICO and you walk away, that's $150 million gone, right?
Right.
You could have a meme coin that has like $2 million worth of liquidity and a $2 billion market cap, and you know, you rug it, you only get $2 million. So right. there was a bit more of a constraint on the amount of money that could be extracted, but they were getting better. They were improving their techniques, right? And that's why I think it all kind of unwound. So, you know, at the end of the day, I get why Solana people are frustrated by the finger pointing from the ETH crowd of like, you know, you guys are running a crime chain. The fact is that Solana is the chain where there's the most activity, there's the most stuff going on, and grifters are going to go to where the liquidity is, right? They're going to go where the money is. And so it's not surprising that there's crime happening on Solana, because that's where meme coins are happening. The same thing happened with NFT mints, same thing happened with ICOs, same thing that happened, you know, in DeFi Summer to an extent. It's just this whole DeFi contagion thing is nonsense, unfortunately, for Tolly.
What do you think about just like the meme coin sector as a whole? I think if you look at the Solana meme coin market and just generally meme coins post this Liberty token launch, things are like down in the red pretty damn bad. Like, meme coins have all retraced. The meme coin sector is like very, very burned. One of these tweets is putting a measure of $6 billion of market cap has been erased from the meme coin market. Solana, the meme coins are dominantly on Solana. This even makes its way into Bloomberg. A Bloomberg headline says, Argentina scandal fuels sell-off on favorite meme coin platform, which is, of course, talking about Solana. Mm. I think, of course, I don't really think anyone thinks meme coins are going to go anywhere. Meme coins are just kind of a primitive that we have in this industry. But what do you think about like the health or longevity or vitality of the meme coin like vertical going forward?
I think, you know, the decoupling of crypto, right? Like the correlation decoupling that happened in DeFi summer has just continued, right? Mm. We've seen cycles within cycles. So, you know, you had DeFi summer, you had this DeFi cycle, then you had an Alt-L1 cycle that followed it, plus NFTs. This is all following the ICO cycle. Then it transitioned into the low float cycle, low float, high FTV cycle. That was the whole thing for a while. A lot of people lost a lot of money on that. And it's probably not even quantified. If you went and looked at all of the tokens, and let's not forget SBF was the one that created that meta, right? The SAM coins, right? 1% float, 200 bill FTV, and then down only. A lot of people lost a lot of money on that, but it's harder to quantify, right? Because it's not a direct rug where you can look at the chart and go, okay, right. Well, these people extracted that, right? And then meme coins. So, we've had cycles within cycles, but meme coins have been around for a long time. Same thing as NFTs. It's just that, they went parabolic. So I think that there is a chance that this is the moment, the top for the attention of meme coins and if the market pivots to something else, especially because we have seen kind of the reemergence of ICOs. Like this is right. Maybe the opportunity for ICOs to make a comeback. The interesting thing about ICOs is they have more utility in theory, right? ICOs gave us Ethereum, they gave us Aave, they gave us a bunch of cool stuff last cycle. Even if 99% of it was dumb, the 1% that wasn't is amazing and it's a good trade. So maybe ICOs come back, maybe something else new and weird emerges. It'll be interesting to see what happens for the rest of this cycle, because I think we're still in a macro bull market. So something will emerge, something right. will capture attention.
Yeah, because there's always a demand to speculate. Meme coins do feel like a logical conclusion of sorts of the token speculation game. And a lot of this token speculation game has really had to route around regulation. Regulation has been very constraining around what kind of ways the crypto industry can play with tokens. And meme coins seem to be some sort of logical conclusion of just it's a pump.fun interface. You can spit out a token. All you need to do is upload a JPEG and you're done. That's it. To me, if we go back to ICOs, it actually kind of feels like we're going full circle. We've reached the end of the road and now we have to hop back to the very beginning where there is a formal sale. You put up capital at risk on the same terms as everyone else. And then we just kind of do this whole system all over again. I would like ICOs to return. I think ICOs are a superior distribution mechanism.
The interesting thing about meme coins is it's the platonic ideal of speculation, right? Pop into existence. It's a very PvP game, right? There's low liquidity versus they're low float, high FTV tokens. Interestingly, mm-hmm. right? Not in the sense of low token float, right? But the actual liquidity that's available is very small, right? So it's a game mm-hmm. of musical chairs where whoever gets out first. Wins, right? And so that I think is fine, except when someone is able to exploit information asymmetry, right? Or technical asymmetry to max extract. And the problem is the people who, same thing with ICOs, right? A lot of teams raised money and just disappeared, and that money got pulled out of the ecosystem, right? They dumped their ETH. Crushed the price of ETH, converted it into fiat, and then drove off into sunset in a Lambo. You see that same thing happen. It's one of the reasons why we, as the crypto community, I think are getting better at having an immune system that protects against these things. But, to go back to the Tolly tweet, I think one of the challenges for Solana is they need to work out how to self-police, right? They need to work out how to identify bad actors in the system and not have, platforms like Meteora get co-opted for extraction, right? And that's hard because as the underdog, there has been this mindset of if anyone says anything about Solana, kill them, right? If someone says something about someone doing something in Solana, there's this immediate reaction of you know, circle the wagons, defend, protect right. the queen, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's great when you're the underdog, but when you are the dominant platform that has the most activity, then that doesn't work because the grifters mm-hmm. have shown up. They're in your house.
Right. And you're circling the wagons around the grifters.
Exactly. And the grifters are like, great. This is amazing. Yeah,
this
right?
is amazing.
Like, they're just filling their pockets and then, you know, they escape. And so, you know, you have to have the ability to discern a good actor versus a bad actor. And I think Solana is discovering that capability in real time.
Mm-hmm. Ken, I'm about to pull up in Polymarket, which is going to show you the odds, Polymarket odds, of Javier Milei being impeached by the end of 2025.
I thought it was going to be the odds of us having a rematch in Singapore.
There is no market for that. Maybe
I'm
going to
get that market.
That
I'm going to get that market up.
What do you think the odds are that Javier Milei is impeached by the end of this year?
I think... it's probably like 20% or something, 15, 20%.
Wow, well done. 16%.
Okay.
16%.
Right. That's not bad.
I did do a stream with six Argentines to hear their reaction about what's going on in the streets. None of them really think Javier Milei is going anywhere. They think this is kind of like a news cycle event that will move on. There is a hearing. And there will be an impeachment trial, but this is, according to just the people that I know in Argentina, this is more opportunistic by Javier Milei's opposition, and there doesn't really seem to be much weight, mainly because what is Argentina's version of a Congress would actually have to vote Javier Milei out, and
my heuristic on these things is like, you know, it's a lot of noise. They don't usually go anywhere. If you're going to mm-hmm. depose someone, you know, usually they get their head cut off or something, right? So yeah.
Okay, Kane, that was all that we're going to talk about Libra. Unless there's anything else that I haven't brought up about the whole Libra debacle, or any last like comments you have before we move on?
No, I think we covered it.
All right, Bankless Nation, we're going to hear Kane's takes about the Bitcoin price, the ETH price. We're going to talk about just the markets at whole. Michael Saylor is once again buying Bitcoin, so that's good news, which is why Bitcoin's back up to $98,000. But before we get there, we're going to talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, starting with Uniswap. It's a browser wallet. It's a mobile wallet. It's also the best place to do DeFi. It's a brand new chain that's recently been integrated into Infinex. Let's go hear from Uniswap right now. Introducing UniChain. Built for DeFi and powered by Uniswap, UniChain is the fast, decentralized layer 2 designed to tackle blockchain speed and cost challenges. With this mainnet now live, you can enjoy transactions that are up to 95% cheaper than the ETH layer 1, all while benefiting from an impressive 1 second block time that will be getting even faster very soon. UniChain is the first layer 2 to launch as a stage 1 rollup on day 1. That means it comes with a fully functional permissionless proof system from the start, increasing transparency and further decentralizing the chain. More than 80 apps are joining the UniChain community, including Coinbase, Circle, Lido, Morpho, and Uniswap. You'll be able to bridge, swap, borrow, and lend, and launch new assets and more from day 1. Built by Uniswap Labs, the team behind the protocol that's processed over 2.75 trillion in all-time volume with zero hacks, UniChain truly enhances DeFi experiences with faster, cheaper, and seamless transactions even across chains. And soon, the UniChain Validation Network will allow anyone to run a node and earn by securing the network. Visit uniswap.org and swap on UniChain today. Ondo Finance is leading the way in the tokenization of real-world assets, with a mission to accelerate the transition to an open economy by building the platforms, assets, and infrastructure that bring financial markets on-chain. With Ondo, institutions get seamless access to tokenized finance, while on-chain users gain access to institutional-grade real-world assets like never before. By bridging traditional finance and the blockchain economy, Ondo is unlocking liquidity, efficiency, and global access, reshaping markets for the digital age. As the leader in institutional adoption, Ondo Finance is the gateway to the $1 trillion tokenization revolution. Institutional-grade finance, on-chain, for everyone. In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and rollups. The core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fraxtl Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fraxtl points, and explore Frax Fractal's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol. It's a digital nation powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through Frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit Frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use Frax.com/r/Bankless when bridging to Fraxel for exclusive Fraxel perks and boosted rewards. And we're back. Bitcoin is up 2.5% on the week, coming in at $98,400. Ether is actually up a little bit more than Bitcoin on the week, 2,730. It's up 2.5% on the week. Maybe it's about the same, actually. The ETH-BTC ratio continues to look absolutely terrible. But I think the biggest thing of note is it was interesting that Michael Saylor last week put out a tweet saying, MicroStrategy has purchased no new Bitcoins this week. We have purchased no Bitcoins. They put out an announcement of a non-purchase. This week, they are putting out a stress release and announcing the private offering of $2 billion of convertible senior notes. So MicroStrategy announcing that they're going to be buying $2 billion of Bitcoin, coming in hot. The total crypto market cap is at $3.3 trillion. Kane, just broad sentiment, broad strokes, state of the market. How do we feel about where we are right now? You said we're in a larger, more macro bull market. I think this cycle has been confusing to many. How are you feeling?
Build a bull market, relax. My favorite tagline. The end of DeFi summer, right? When DeFi started falling off a cliff in May, if you were in the DeFi trenches, it felt real bad. But, mm-hmm. you know, Alt-L1s, Bitcoin, ETH, everything kept ripping, right? We had another 6 months of basically up only, right? And I think this is one of those things where cycles within cycles. We had this meme coin cycle. It may kind of deflate now, but something will replace it, and you know, we'll see a kind of, you know, continued strength with Bitcoin leading, and then eventually, you know, and this is happened in every single market, people get to a point where euphoria kicks in and they're looking to outperform Bitcoin. A simple 3x is not enough, right? And they're looking for a 10x, 20x, whatever. And so that's when that rotation out of Bitcoin, you know, looking for the next 10x really starts to accelerate. You know, the things that are in the top 50, top 100, really ripping. And so I think we will see that again, probably towards the end of the year.
You are calling for business as usual, even though up to this point, I would say everyone is talking about how different and odd and weird this cycle is. Do you agree that it's weird? Or are you just saying that this is just what it looks like when you're inside of the cycle?
This is what it looks like if you're not in the right thing at the right moment in cycle, right? If you were in meme coins over the last 6 months, you've been having a good time, right? Yeah. But remember, there were a lot of people that were sidelined for DeFi summer. They're like, this is dumb. You know, we don't like it. Especially Bitcoin maxis, right? So I just think those people who were sidelined, if you go back and read the timeline in late 2020, there's a lot of cope. There's a lot of cope. There's a lot of tears. There's a lot of people that are like, this is dumb. It's going to end, you know, badly, whatever. And so I think that's not surprising. It's not surprising. And let's not forget, a lot of the people who were the dominant voices, influencers, KOLs or whatever, from last cycle were kind of sidelined in meme coins. Mm. A lot of the groups I'm in, they didn't FOMO into meme coins until like the last couple of months. Maybe even post-Trump, right? So they bought the top. They're now wrecked. Uh-huh. Of course, there's like, you know,
turning into Bitcoiners.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's unsurprising, but, you know, the macro setup is still there.
There's one of the big themes of this market is, call it the VC chains, but I don't know if that's totally fair. Things like Bear Chain, Story Protocol is on here because it's up 220% on the week. Bear Chain just launched. We have Monad incoming. I'm definitely forgetting a bunch. Say, Aptos, Sui. What do you think about the new cohort of chains? Is this same pattern that we've always seen before? Or is there anything that like kind of stands out to you as an investing theme?
I mean, again, like let's go back to last cycle, right? DeFi summer leads into NFT mania plus Alt-L1 season, right? like, I think we're too stupid to not have an Alltel 1 season. I think it's just going to happen again.
But the Alltel 1 season last cycle happened because DeFi summer blew out and overflowed Ethereum's demand for block space. And Ethereum is like, I'm going to be decentralized and my block space is going to be really expensive. And that created the alt layer 1 like mania because everyone realized Ethereum couldn't scale. I don't see the same catalyst for like an alt layer 1 speculation game
because we already don't have... starting, my friend. It's already starting. Interop, the interop wars, fragmentation, you know, L2, like the FUD against L2s. Okay, fine, you've scaled, but you know, you've broken the thing, right? Like the infighting has even started, right? Like Amin's losing his mind on the timeline. You've got Martin, you know, you got Martin calling for canonical L2s. I've been saying we need to shut down the L2 tokens. It's creating, you know, confusion amongst, you know, new entrants. Like, do I buy ETH? Do I buy ARB? Do I buy the base token? Oh, there's no base token. Now what do I do? You know, so this setup, this narrative of like ETH is broken from an investment standpoint because of the fragmentation of L2 tokens, it's already there. The setup's there. It's ready.
I agree that the pattern is there of crypto Twitter discussing many of the things that we discussed during a bull market. But what is missing to me is the new capital and the actual bull market side of these things. I think we're all doing this like mock bull markets where the bull market is missing. Except for in Bitcoin, Sol, Dogecoin, and Ripple, the bull market is narrowly impacting those things, but not the crypto industry as a whole, I would say.
Except meme coins. But
meme coins didn't drive adoption, did they? Like, I don't think the stats back up meme coins actually bringing in new people.
I don't think DeFi Summer drove adoption. DeFi Summer was so PvP.
Yeah.
Like, No new people turned up to Yams. Like, it was onboarding existing crypto natives who were like, I guess I'm doing pool 200, you know, billion percent APY farming now. I'm a farmer. Like, it was all the same people. Of course, it brought some new people in, but the new people don't come until euphoria kicks in. And we haven't had euphoria.
Okay, but then it was NFTs that did bring people in. Just looking for the internal catalyst.
Sure.
And I don't think that was meme coins, and I don't know what that is. And of course, we won't really know what that is until after we're experiencing it. But I'm like always kind of dubious that because I'm not really seeing some sort of like internal catalyst phenomenon mechanism that we're building inside of crypto that outside world really, really thinks is cool.
I mean, there's you know, Trump coin, we saw it with Moonshot, right? They onboarded, you know, 200,000-300,000 people in the space of a week, right? So it wasn't nothing.
But the so there was a study on all of those addresses that got onboarded with Moonshot, and less than 1% did anything else on chain after buying the Trump coin.
I mean, let's go and have a conversation about Coinbase Earn Maker deal, where they gave Coinbase like $200 million for people to make $5 CDPs, and people literally just like dumped the thing and never went on chain. Like, many such cases. Like, there's just a lot of examples of like, okay, fine. Only 1% of people are activated, but that's still 4,000 new trench warriors that we got in the space of a week. Like, you can do a lot of damage with 4,000 trenches. That's not nothing.
We're going to talk about the Kaido airdrop, which I think is definitely the talk of the town, at least today. Thankfully, there's something else to talk about post Libra drama. But before we talk about the Kaido airdrop, a message from our friends and sponsors over at Reserve. Reserve is a permissionless platform that allows anyone to create, own, and govern on-chain indices. So that's kind of like one end of their product. They have indices on the left, and they have some indices of sectors of crypto that you'd be totally familiar with, the base indice, meme coin indices. But then on their long-term goal, they want to use indices of indices to make a new standard of global internet currency, which I think is pretty cool. You can check them out at bankless.cc/reserve. All right, something that happened in the markets this week was the Kaido airdrop, which is a very hyped airdrop. And I saw many, many threads about the hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars that people are going to get from their yaps. Turns out the like $100 per yap estimation came down to something like 13 cents per yap. So crypto Twitter kind of really overextended how big of a payday they were going to get. Did you farm any yaps, Kane? Were you a yapper?
I was a yapper. I am a yapper. We also have our own yap leaderboard for Infinex. And so I think there was a little bit of hopium post, Hyperliquid, where people saw a bunch of perps traders, you know, get eight figure airdrops, and they're like, "What about me? I'm a good guy. I talk on Twitter too." and so I think that there was a little bit of hopium there that was going to play out. I haven't done the math on it to figure out, you know, the 13 cent 17 cent thing. But yeah, I mean, it's a couple of orders of magnitude off from expectations. So that's going to have some sad people running around today.
So if you're just listening to this on podcast and you're not on Twitter, Kaido is this crypto analytics platform that uses AI to kind of like aggregate, analyze, and like surface data from both like on-chain data and off-chain data. Like a lot of Twitter data and social media data goes into just like pointers towards where investors are allocating their attention. Like what narrative themes are capturing a lot of attention right now? And what we're looking at right now is the Infinex Yap board. So who is yapping and who's like tweeting or talking about Infinex? And there's like whole entire sectors. It's like who's talking about DeFi, who's talking about AI, how's sentiment? So it's kind of just like an aggregation, a data platform using sentiment analysis and some AI tools as well. And they released their token, Kaido, and they distributed it to people who were yapping, as in people who were talking about different sectors of the crypto market. You would have to, of course, go to Kaido, sign up, and then you could start to accrue some yaps based off of how well your tweets performed. Bigger banger tweets got you more yaps. Kane, how does it feel to be fourth place on your own leaderboard?
It's pretty dark, actually. Like, I said this a few times during the, I was active in the Bearer chain leaderboard as well, right? Mm. And I would like have these tweets talking about Bearer, and then it would start to pump. It would have like, 200, 300, 400 likes. And then I'd be like, "Oh, you idiot! You didn't even say Bearer chain in there, right? Like, because you have to say it. Yeah, like the AI is not smart enough to know you're talking about Bearer chain if you make some dumb joke about it, right? So I had a couple of good tweets that went that pumped a little bit, but didn't actually have the hook. I'm not a great yapper, it turns out. I think the interesting thing about yaps, right? Let's talk about market dynamics for a second. Mm-hmm. There were people who sort of predicted this, and I was talking to a few people in Hong Kong. The difference, or the delta between expectations of yaps, right, and the reality on the ground, right, in terms of like people are talking their book. Even before they have a book, right? They're talking.
They knew they were getting a book.
So it's like you've given the most skillful people at pumping bags a free bag, and they're going to pump it to the moon. So of course they're talking. You know, the delta between that and reality is probably as skewed as any other project in history,
right?
Because you weaponized the biggest, people to talk their book. There was, it's organic in one sense, but it's also like these people are, it's like you got a bunch of actors, right? Like go and sit around at a party pretending to have fun, right? And it's like, oh, that looks like the most fun party ever. And then 20 minutes later, they're like, where's my cash? And you're like, oh, it wasn't a party at all. It was just people pretending to have fun.
Once it was announced that Kaido had done the snapshot, so no more yaps were accruing to anyone, I did notice just a complete hollowing out of reply guys in my DL, like in my replies and everything. And just Twitter just got like reshifted and everything. It's got a lot more normal very, very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, the actors were, we stopped paying the actors.
The actors went home. Yeah.
Yeah. The actors were like, all right, job done. See you later.
There's 1 billion tokens. It came in at a $1.30 valuation as people were claiming and selling them. It fell down to about 90 cents, and it is currently resurging back up to $1.80, which gives Kaido a $1.8 billion valuation. Something that's different about Kaido, it's not a DeFi app. It is not a protocol. I don't think they have any plans on decentralizing their system. I don't think decentralization really makes sense in the Kaido stack. So the unique thing here is this is a centralized company incorporated in Seattle, Washington, so inside of the United States, issuing a token. There was no sale or anything. So I believe they're claiming that it doesn't pass the Howey test, but this is a not a common activity by centralized companies to issue
feels
tokens.
Bullish.
Feels it does feel bullish. It feels like this is something that could not have happened in anything out of outside of the Trump era. Something that also I thought was pretty cool. This is a tweet from David Phelps, who just basically tweeted out that Kaido used its own AI analytics to determine who is actually values aligned with Kaido. And so I think Kaido, as a function of the algorithm to determine who gets how many tokens, tried to like map out who is bullish or bearish on Kaido. And if you are a Kaido bear, then you got nerfed. Your token supplies got nerfed, which makes so much sense. So like all of your bull posters receive more Kaido tokens, and anyone who's like talking negatively about Kaido is like receiving less tokens. And the way that they did that was they used AI to actually kind of evaluate which yappers are more Kaido aligned. I thought that was pretty clever.
We need this system for Ethereum. We need to scale this out to the social layer of Ethereum, right? Look, I'm all for bear tears, right? Like, you know, the more punishment bears take, the better. So I think this is a really cool approach. You know, we're gonna see more kind of innovation in the airdrop meta. I think airdrops aren't going away, but you know, trying to get alignment. It was interesting. We did our portion of the Pengu airdrop at Infinix last week. And it was about a month later because we had to, you know, so we got a carve out of Pengu from the original airdrop for Infinix users. And so we had to distribute that. But it took a little while. We had some issues. And so eventually we got the platform ready to go. We did the airdrop. And, you know, a lot of times people who cheat an airdrop, they're like, well, it was going to be down only. I had to, you know, rush out the door or whatever. I mean, look at Kaido, right? You know, $1.40 to 90 cents. All these people or whatever it was, $1.40 down to 90 cents. You know, people rushing out the door, right? That first wave of people. And then, you know, it starts to grind up, right? And so what was interesting to me, though, is a month later, Pengu is at 1 cent. It's not volatile. It's sitting there. There's no rush out the door. There's plenty of time, right? And yet we saw this activity where people just instantly cheated this airdrop when they got it. And I was kind of shocked by that. I was like, the excuse of like, oh, you know, it was a race condition and you needed to get out was gone. And yet they still dumped. So what's interesting about that is we know who that was. And you know, we've got a whole bunch of other people turning up saying we also want to do an airdrop. And I'm like, well, you know what? If you insta-geated it, we're probably going to nerf you. Like, you don't deserve an airdrop. Like, if some other project turns up and says, hey, we want to airdrop to you, maybe we'll give you 10% on the dollar of what you would have gotten. Because the whole point of an airdrop is to buy attention. Right. And if you were just like, I'm out of here instantly, right? Also, I you know, I hold a lot of Pudgy Penguins, so I took it personally as well. So, I think that we will see an evolution in this process, because airdrops, as much as I think airdrops are a very inefficient way of getting attention, they're not going anywhere. People like them too much. We also saw it on Infinix, a 10x uplift in activity during this Pengu airdrop. It's a hard thing to wean ourselves off of. You know, the world loves airdrops, but we need to find better ways of distributing them.
Do you think future airdrops will take in data from past airdrops as it relates to wallets or Twitter accounts? Because if you wanted to collect your Kaido airdrop, you needed to connect your Twitter account. So now selling or holding behavior is linked to people's Twitter accounts. Do you think in the future airdrops will like try and ingest this information to like kind of inform their distribution?
I think we've seen it before. People have tried to do like Optimism did this, right? They did the three waves of airdrops and you know, if you weren't aligned, which I guess is like communist speak for you cheated. But you know, if you're not aligned with the project, then you didn't get the next airdrop or you got a much lower number, right? Which I think is really good, right? And so I think we will see more innovation when it comes to airdrop distribution to figure out who's aligned. Because if I give you Pengu, you're supposed to hold it and you're supposed to, you know, then become aligned with the project. If you just instantly dump it for USDC, you're not even like, you'd like get right. Get out of here.
You're doing the opposite of what
you're doing. The opposite of what, you know, there's no advantage we're looking there. For. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right.
The Kaido airdrop was dropped on Base, and this is a tweet from Dan Smith from Blockworks Research, who says, Base has been humming along nicely since the Kaido airdrop, topping out at 160 transactions per second for a median fee of 2 cents. Scaling efforts clearly paying off. With over $1.5 billion in TVL, the METH protocol is home to METH, the fourth largest ETH liquid staking token, offering one of the highest APRs among the top 10 LSTs. And now, CMETH takes things even further. This restaked version captures multiple yields across Kerak, Eigenlayer, Symbiotic, and many more, making CMETH the most efficient and most composable LRT solution on the market. Metamorphosis Season 1 dropped $7.7 million in Cook rewards to METH holders. Season 2 is currently ongoing, allowing users to earn staking, restaking, and AVS yields, plus rewards in Cook, METH Protocol's governance token, and more. Don't miss out on the opportunity to stake, restake, and shape the future of METH Protocol with Cook. Participate today at meth.mantle.xyz. Are you ready to see what the future of on-chain lending looks like? Look no further than Morpho, the first and only DeFi protocol integrated by Coinbase, leading the charge with the DeFi mullet. Fintech in the front, Morpho at the back. Whether you're a business or a crypto user, Morpho is your go-to lending infrastructure for on-chain loans. Thanks to Morpho's immutable code, you can rely on the gold standard of decentralization, giving you and your projects full ownership and control. And if you're a user wanting to earn or borrow on your terms, Morpho's newly refreshed app at app.morpho.org makes it simple to tailor your own risk-reward profile. Choose from different vaults and markets curated by trusted third parties. Plus, Coinbase users get access to crypto-backed loans right through the Coinbase app, powered by Morpho, all in just a few clicks. So whether you're a builder looking to integrate Morpho or a user searching for the most flexible DeFi lending experience, it's time to check out the brand new app at app.morpho.org and experience the future of on-chain lending today. Thello is transitioning from a mobile-first, EVM-compatible Layer 1 blockchain to a high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built on OP Stack with EigenDA and one-block finality. All happening soon with a hard fork. With over 600 million total transactions, 12 million weekly transactions, and 750,000 daily active users, Thello's meteoric rise would place it among one of the top Layer 2s. Built for the real world and optimized for fast, low-cost global payments. As the home of the stablecoins, Thello hosts 13 native stablecoins across 7 different currencies, including native USDT on Opera MiniPay, and with over 4 million users in Africa alone. In November, stablecoin volumes hit $6.8 billion, made for seamless on-chain FX trading. Plus, users can pay gas with ERC-20 tokens like USDT and USDC and send crypto to phone numbers in seconds. But why should you care about Thello's transition to a Layer 2? Layer 2s unify Ethereum. L1s fragment it. By becoming a Layer 2, Thello leads the way for other EVM-compatible Layer 1s to follow. Follow Thello on X and witness the great Thello halvening, where Thello cuts its inflation in half as it enters its Layer 2 era and continuing its environmental leadership. The Arbitrum Portal is your one-stop hub to entering the Ethereum ecosystem. With over 800 apps, Arbitrum offers something for everyone. Dive into the epicenter of DeFi, where advanced trading, lending, and staking platforms are redefining how we interact with money. Explore Arbitrum's rapidly growing gaming hub, from immersed role-playing games, fast-paced fantasy MMOs, to casual luck battle mobile games. Move assets effortlessly between chains and access the ecosystem with ease via Arbitrum's expansive network of bridges and on-ramps. Step into Arbitrum's flourishing NFT and creator space, where artists, collectors, and social converge, and support your favorite streamers all on-chain. Find new and trending apps and learn how to earn rewards across the Arbitrum ecosystem with limited time campaigns from your favorite projects. Empower your future with Arbitrum. Visit portal.arbitrum.io to find out what's next on your Web3 journey. This is a tweet from Sazzle talking about the Pectra upgrade that's going to be coming early April is the estimation. So we have a couple testnet forks. Holsky and Sepolia testnets will fork on the 24th and then the 5th of March. And so we'll have two testnet forks before we're ready for the Ethereum mainnet fork, only under the conditions that the testnet forks go well, probably sometime in early April. Pectra, it's not the biggest upgrade, but there is it is the biggest in terms of like the sheer number of EIPs, but it's nothing in comparison to like the merge of Dankun. We have, for the Ethereum nerds that are out there, we have a max effective balance that is incoming, and then also we have a blob limit increase. And so that we're getting some more blobs and we're getting some max effective balance and then a few other tweaks as well. Unless you have any take specifically, Kane, about Pectra, what's your kind of take about the Ethereum broader discussions around like pace of development? Is it communist? It's Aaron's broad positioning inside of like the chain wars.
I was just thinking, I missed the Rinkeby test net as you were listing out those test nets. Like, all my OG test nets are gone now. It's a bit sad. But in terms of pace of development, like, you know, it's not an issue of fundamentals, right? It's not an issue of like delivery. Ethereum, you know, from a research and delivery perspective, I think is better than it's ever been. You know, the core devs understand what they're doing. The prioritization is good. Yes, of course, these roadmaps are longer than we all like because we're impatient, you know, people sitting on the sideline, you know, shouting, come on, like, you know, let's go faster. But I think it's still an issue of the overall comms. Like the comms and marketing side is what's missing, right?
Really? You think it all boils down to comms and marketing?
I think it's just not communicating what the benefits of these things are, right? And, you know, Sasano does a great job. He does a great job. You know, he walks through everything on a daily basis and, you know, why it's important, whatever. But the narrative alignment, right? In the Ethereum community, in terms of like constructing the right narratives to make sense. You know, I think it's good. It's good that it's decentralized, right? But it is a bit uncoordinated. It's just too uncoordinated. It's, you know, so having some more coordination there would be I think beneficial. But you know, we're not really seeing it. And you know, I said the other day, like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now, you know, that Vitalik Cook, and we haven't seen much cooking, you know, from that perspective, right? From the comms and marketing perspective. So, so yeah, here we are. Let's, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I do think it would be good to see a little bit more traction there.
I did see a tweet. I don't know if it came out of Ethereum.org specifically, but there is a job posting for a social media manager for the Ethereum account, which has 3.7 million followers. So after all of this angst, we are getting potentially a new social media manager of the Ethereum account. Maybe we can get the narrative coordination.
My genuine question is, did we have a social media manager of the account?
I think the answer is firmly no, we did not.
So like that, in and of itself is just like giga retarded. Like, I'm sorry. Like what are we doing? Like, it's not like we're replacing the underperforming social media manager or intern that we had, right? We're like, oh, right, this is a good idea. Like, we figured, like, the rest of crypto figured this out like 5 years ago that you need someone running a social media account, right? So, you know, baby steps. I guess
broadly the Ethereum community is asking, like, hey, maybe we have put too much emphasis on credible neutrality. Maybe we should try and coordinate some sort of like centralized leadership team to point the ecosystem in a coherent direction. And we can like shed some credible neutrality points in order to meet those ends. And that has been that decision is like very contentious. I don't think Vitalik likes that at all.
No, I don't think so. But, you know, the interesting thing is that Ethereum on some levels is a victim of its own success, right? But it still has the underdog mentality, you know, that I was talking about with Solana, right? Where, you know, Bitcoin maxis were like, this is a pre-mined scam. It's all going to end poorly. Every time anything bad happens in Ethereum, you know, from the DAO hack to bridge hack, like just any bad thing, there's a bunch of people who are, at least historically, were ready to just jump on Ethereum and be like, see, we told you, right? And run victory laps. And so, you know, the approach to that, I think, was just to not engage, right? Continue to deliver, deliver the roadmap, deliver the tech, deliver the research, do all that stuff, right? And you know, that kind of worked against the Bitcoin maxis because there weren't many of them and they're fucking idiots. But like, you know, it doesn't work when you're competing against a project like
a team,
you know, a team like Sui, like even, and ignore Solana for a second here, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, the if this alt L1 thing pops up, right? Like even Monad, like mm-hmm. you know, like they do a really good job. They've created a cult, Bearer Chain, right? They've created a cult. They've created this cult following that feels like the early days of Ethereum in a lot of ways, right? And so I just think that there's a level of competition now that especially Ethereum mainnet, because you also have Arbitrum and Optimism and Base competing for Mindshare against Ethereum mainnet. And if Ethereum mainnet doesn't maintain Mindshare, that's net negative for all of the Ethereum ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, having this, you know, credibly neutral, you know, above the fray approach, it served us for a while. But, you know, one of the things about being a founder is you need to be able to adapt to the reality on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think that Vitalik needs to adapt to the reality on the ground. We are in a different environment in 2025 to what we were in 2015 or even 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of Monad, the Monad testnet is one of the things that was launched this week. It's kind of crazy how much there has been discussion around Monad, and yet their testnet has just now gotten out the door, which I think it gives a huge just like plus one to the size of the cult, because if there's no testnet, not even a chain, there's no testnet, then what's left? The answer is, well, there's the cult. That's the cult that's there. One thing I thought that was worth bringing up this week was the SEC has announced a cyber and emerging technologies unit to protect retail investors. I'm calling this the SEC's cyber police. And so there's an organization being made spearheaded by the SEC, but does different things, mainly going after fraud across the internet. So they are focusing on transactions in the following areas: fraud committed using emerging technologies such as AI and machine learning, fraud on social media, the dark web, or false websites to perpetrate fraud, hacking to obtain material non-public information, takeovers of retail brokerages accounts, fraud involving blockchain technology and crypto assets, which relates to much of the things that we discuss on the weekly roll-up. That is all of the fraud that we talked about at the beginning of this episode and many other scams and scandals. And then a few other ways that the SEC's new organization, the Cyber and Emerging Technologies Unit to Protect Retail Investors. So I think we're getting some cyber police to come and actually crack down on, even though it's not securities transactions, fraud, which I think is just totally fine. What's your take?
Look, I'm not, you know, the unintended consequences of regulation are so powerful that I'm never a cheerleader for this, right? Yeah. Like, you know, it's great now. Go after some AI guys and make them feel some pain, right? It sounds good. You know, go kill that guy. Don't bother me. And of course, we've been saying there's so much fraud. Go after the fraud and not Uniswap, right? Mm-hmm. They went after the wrong Hayden, it turns out. So of course, like, we want efficient markets and, you know, we want fraud to be weeded out. I just think that there's a danger being too reliant on regulatory agencies to fix the problems in any industry, right?
So Kane, we identified things like the ICO mania started with things like Ethereum, started things like Aave,
MasterCoin,
ended with fraud. DeFi summer started with Compound, started with Uniswap, ended with fraud. NFTs started legit, ended with fraud. Memes like Bonk started totally fine, community bottom up ecosystem, ended with fraud. And so yet when we weigh all of that on one side, you're still saying that the potential risk of overregulation is higher than the potential costs of having these metas that always end in fraud on the crypto side. Is that what you're saying?
100%.
Wow.
And my view is this, that like, I think Matt Levine has a very good take on this, right? If you're the compliance officer in a bank, one of the most regulated industries in the world, right? You got a fraud dial. Right now, if you ask someone where should they dial the fraud between 0 and 100, right, a lot of people, the naive take is 0, right? But at 0, there's no bank. You don't get to have a bank. You can't have 0. 0 is not an option. 0 is the like brainlet take right? Of, well, obviously no fraud. Like, why would we want fraud? And it's like, if you have an organization of 50,000 people running around doing stuff, humans are dumb and bad and they do bad things, right? If you want zero fraud, shut the whole place down. And that's the alternative, right? So, you know, should we have good fraud enforcement? Yes. Can we hope for a world of no fraud in a permissionless environment? No, we can't. It's not realistic, right? So it's about finding the right balance. And so if we throw our hands up and say, let's hope that this regulatory agency solves these problems for us, you know, it can go badly. And you know, those kinds of agencies can get co-opted so easily. Look at SPF. He co-opted so many different, you know, people in positions of power to facilitate that. So the unintended consequences of giving regulators too much power, is very dangerous. It doesn't necessarily even stop the fraud, and it can create far, far wider unintended consequences.
So the creation of this, call it a task force, is being complemented by the work of Hester Persson, acting chair Mark Ueda, who are both very crypto positive. Hester Persson, we just had her on the podcast. So maybe what you're saying is, like, just because we have these two crypto positive SEC chair and commissioners, David, don't be naive, because once these two individuals are gone, we're going to be left with Gary Gensler 2.0, Gary Gensler's cousin, Gary Gensler's son. And now this tool is in the hands of them, and now it's going to come and choke us out. Is kind of what you're saying?
That's the risk, right? That's the risk. And so that's why my view is always that we should look to market dynamics to solve these things, right? And, you know, when it comes to ICOs, we were starting to figure this out, but then regulation killed it, right? When it comes to you know, meme coins, we've sort of figured this out as an industry a little bit, right? Like, there's been this expose that's come internally, right? Like no one, you know, to the best of my knowledge, the police didn't go and kick that guy's door down and that's, you know, and arrest him, right? I mean, they did kick Shane Copeland's door down, right? Which is fucking ridiculous, right? You know, so like, this is my point, right? Like, we need to be able to self-police, right? We need to be able to have the right structures and incentives to weed these things out. We can't rely on some external body. It's not to say that an external body is bad or good or, you know, whatever. Let's say it's neutral. It's not sufficient. We have a direct responsibility as an industry to sort our own shit out.
And I think maybe one of the things that we're building in this industry is structures that can't do fraud, can't be evil. And I would say that's something that you are building here at Infinex, Kane. Infinex is, call it a neobank on the internet that can't do evil because it's all governed by smart contracts and code. Talk to me a little bit about what's going on at Infinex. There's this new term that you guys are inventing called Swidge. Maybe download us on Swidge and everything else that's going on under the sun at Infinex.
Yeah, so, you know, we've talked about fragmentation and chains and, you know, all of the stuff that, you know, comes from that, right? Like, people needing to get Kaito on Base, but they're Solana maxis. They got to set up, you know, Mert was talking about this, right? He didn't have, you know, he'd set up a Base wallet, but, you know, a lot of people who are on Solana haven't got a Base wallet, or vice versa. People on Base that don't have a Solana wallet. So we are trying to build a platform that basically allows anyone to interact on any chain by having this universal swapping and bridge functionality called Swidge, which means that if you get an airdrop on Solana, you can bridge it to Base or Optimism or Arbitrum or Bearer Chain, and you can deposit the airdrop onto some Boyko yield farming scheme in Bearer Chain and start earning yield without needing to go and understand how to, you know, what's the Bearer Chain canonical bridge, or, you know, how do I secure my seed phrase in a new phantom wallet for this, you know, this new chain, you know, Monad, for example, right? So the idea is to make it easy to do things on chain again. You know, we got to a point where there was so much fragmentation that it was hard to do things on chain.
When I was watching this demo of you switching, I was interested in the choice to actually show users like this swap and bridge interface, where you can actually like kind of go through the steps in the process, not unlike Uniswap. But there's also a choice where you just abstract that completely in the background and you don't even show users their chains at all whatsoever. How does Infinex fit inside of the choice to actually like show chains and tell users what chains they're on versus abstracting all chains totally?
Yeah, so there's a very long-running debate internally in the design and product team about this. And we've got versions of this interface that are purely chainless, right? And I think that that is directionally where things will go. But at the moment, people still have a need, because we're still we're talking about people that learned a bunch of dumb things. Right. We told them a bunch of dumb things and they're like, but I need to know that. Right. And so if you take it away, they feel like, oh, I'm missing something. Right. So it's going to be a slow re-education process of like, it doesn't matter what USDC, is sitting, what chain USDC is sitting on. It just doesn't matter. Right. If you want USDC and Echo, okay, just tell us that. You want to deposit in your Echo account? Okay. Press the button. Press the USDC to Echo button. Right. And what if you don't have USDC? Then push the dollars into Echo button. We know that Echo wants USDC. You have some yield-bearing stablecoin that you're sitting in. You shouldn't need to know that. I want the stablecoin that makes me money, and then I want to buy the Echo thing. Mm-hmm. Just click the button. We'll do the rest, right? So it will eventually get there, but there's a slow re-education process where if you take too much away, people start getting worried. They're like, what's happening? I need to know the chain that I'm on.
Like crypto natives have just tooled up and become so educated about how to use these things that we actually have to dumb ourselves down to use like more normie friendly apps. That's pretty funny. That's not a problem that I've ever been faced with yet in my crypto career until you building Infinex. If somebody's curious, is Infinex open? Can they just go and make an account?
Yep. Just make an account.
What's the roadmap with Infinex?
Make an account. We are doing a bunch of work with airdrops, a bunch of work with new chains. We just added UniChain, as you mentioned. We just added Uniswap as well. So you can swap on Uniswap directly on UniChain. Go and buy some Uni on UniChain. It's a game at the moment of rolling out more integrations, more chains, more functionality, so that people can feel comfortable putting their assets into Infinex instead of into Binance or Bybit or Upbit.
Mm-hmm. Kane, it was certainly a doozy of a week. Thanks a lot, my man, for helping me go through all this news. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.
Bankless Nation, you guys know the deal. Crypto is risky. You can lose what you put in. We are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we are glad you are with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.